All right, 9 minutes past six. Hope you're all doing well this morning. Looking forward to the show as we are. And we kick off, as we do every Sunday morning, by delving down under and seeing what Katie McDonald has for us. Very good morning to you, madam.
Good morning, Sarah Jane. In fact, an exceptionally good morning to you.
Oh, good. Okay, now you are... greetings from Baradu was the message on your email this morning. Have I pronounced that incorrectly, or is that correct?
Sarah Jane, not even close. Not even close. Baradu. Baradu.
Not even close, she says. Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah. Baradu. Tell us about Baradu, please.
Baradu is about an hour and a half, an hour and 20 minutes south of Sydney. Kind of southwest-ish. And not too far from the coast. I think if you drive an hour, you'll hit a beach somewhere towards the coast. It's part of an area called the Southern Highlands. In fact, Sarah Jane, you probably feel quite at home. It's very genteel, rolling hills, very green, pretty lush, lovely foliage. It has four seasons, which is not so usual here. So, yeah, it's very pretty. It is very pretty and very calm.
Listen, I've just done a Google search for Baradu. You've got to have a pretty penny to live in Baradu, haven't you? Look at those houses.
Yeah, I don't. But you've got to check the main street, because I've always loved this one. So the main street of Baradu is called Bong Bong Street.
Right, okay.
Well, the main street of Barrel. Baradu is a suburb of Barrel. So, yeah, that's... some fantastic names, yeah. So, you know, if you just quickly go down to the local Chinese on Bong Bong, get yourself a meal. That's how it works.
It looks really nice. It looks really posh, actually. I don't think they'd let me in, Katie, to be honest with you. I don't think I'm the calibre of person they want in Baradu.
Sarah Jane, this is Australia. This is, you know, the epitome of egalitarianism where everyone is welcomed. You know, all types, income brackets. There's no judgment.
Is that the epitome of Australia? Fine. That's not the Australia. Listen, let me not start slagging off Australia at 11 minutes past six in the morning. Okay. That's a conversation another day. To all my Australian listeners, I love you all. Right. Okay. Let's start. Let's stop with this nonsense and get on with the matter at hand. This week, yes, our president, Cyril Ramaphosa, became the fifth person, the fifth in line to receive the vaccine as our vaccine program, began its rollout. And, the Australian Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, also received his COVID vaccination.
He did indeed, and he's evidently not quite as up there as Cyril, because he was the 12th in line.
Ah, there you go.
So, yeah, there you go.
Who was the first, Katie?
Well, this is what's great. So there are 12 people that got their vaccinations today, and the first person was a lovely 86-year-old lady, Jane Milisiak, and she was selected to be numero uno to get the jab. Lovely little pic there, fantastic photo op for the Prime Minister. You know, he's talking to her and she's getting her first injection. And then he, because he does spot a photo op, he's like, you know, make the peace sign, you know, V for vaccination, you know, great little pic there. Well, she kind of put her hand around the wrong way and flipped the bird instead. So... it was a bit of a fail. But, yeah, she was the first and one of 12 people. So that was the kind of ceremonial rolling out beginning of the vaccination process, which starts in earnest tomorrow.
So Australia went with an older person. I think the UK's first person, I think, in fact, the first person in the world was an older lady. We went with frontline workers. It was a nurse at Khayelitsha District Hospital who had the first vaccine here. Interesting to see because as you say, it is ultimately a PR opportunity. That is entirely how the whole thing is structured. But it's interesting to see the different countries and who they're putting forward as their, you know, the figurehead of the campaign.
The face of the campaign. And it's quite interesting, on one of the news sites here, they've got like a vaccine calculator. So you enter, you know, certain data with regards to yourself, and it indicates where you will be, because there are five groupings
that
they've identified. And yeah, it tells you which group you should be in to get the vaccine.
What group are you
in? So it'll be interesting. Apparently I'm in group two.
Oh, of how many? Five?
Okay, yeah, so five groups, yeah. But I think oh, I don't want to let the cat out of the bag. It's slightly age-related. And I do spend time... Yeah, okay. And I do spend a bit of time in an area, although I'm not a frontline worker, I do spend time in a health area. So, okay. Yeah, if you have any... Yeah, exactly. Any exposure to hospitals, places like that.
So no inferences to be drawn as to your age just by the basis of your grouping. No inferences to be drawn on that regard at all, please.
None whatsoever,
none at all,
Sarah Jane.
None at all. Okay. Listen, tell us a little bit more then about the rollout of the vaccine. You say that there's five groups, and you can find out as an Australian in which group you are going to be. Is it similar to the UK in terms of it was the elderly? I think they're now they at last count, and Gavin Gray will give us the update, I'm sure, later in the show. Last week, England had, or the UK had, already vaccinated 15 million people. And they'd worked their way down, I think, from the octogenarians. And I think they were now in the 60s, people, 60, maybe even 50, which isn't bad going, actually. What's the sort of the schedule, the procedure for Australia?
Well, essentially, each state, will govern their own sort of vaccination process as such. And there's a pretty generic sort of standard. So what they're doing first is they're doing frontline health workers, they're doing people in aged care, people working in disability care, and not just the people that work in those situations, obviously aged care residents and such. So it will focus on those frontline workers, on health workers, on any, you know, people in caring industries and the elderly. And then it will work its way down from that. So I would assume that that's pretty much, or that will be the standard in most places, because you've got to get those emergency workers, you know, the paramedics, the frontline doctors, the nurses, and especially those at aged care, because as we know, that's a very vulnerable part of the population. We've got to get those people vaccinated first.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's what they're going to be following here.
Okay, interesting. Good stuff. If you're just joining us this morning at 17 minutes past six, we're chatting, as we do every Sunday morning, to our underground correspondent. Why was I going to say underground? She's not underground at all. She's very much above ground and on terra firma.
I am.
From Sydney, Katie McDonald, although not in Sydney today, in Borobudur. Okay, the Indonesian capital has been hit by terrible floods, and more than 1,000 people have been forced to flee their homes, Katie.
Yeah, this is a shocking thing. Look, it is monsoon season, but still, that never takes away from the damage that these torrential rains and floods impact upon, you know, the population in these areas. So they've got major rescue operations underway in Jakarta. The flooding has hit a large part of the city, hasn't yet got to the city centre, but currently just under 1,400 residents have been evacuated. That was yesterday on Saturday, from the southern and eastern areas of the city. This is a big city, you know, it's home to 10 million people. So you can well imagine what happens in a situation like this. And the floodwaters have risen to levels as high as 1.8 metres. You can see the footage of houses and people and cars underwater and such. So they've got these evacuation centres up and running. They're working on that. The rain has stopped at the moment, but they're predicting more. One of the terrible issues is that they're also dealing with the highest caseload and death tallies from COVID in Southeast Asia. Sure. So Indonesia's been hit pretty hard. And, yeah, it's just double, triple whammy, you know, in a bit. Yeah, that almost sounds too trite. So, yes, they're on high alert. They're going to be getting more rainfall. And I think, Sarah Jane, you know, when one looks at it more in depth or taking it, a little bit further, it's one of these cases where, yes, it's a country that has, monsoon weather. They have floods, they have high rainfall at this time of the year, but it's getting worse. And that's one of the concerns, because they say that, you know, in years to come, the flooding crisis is only going to get worse.
Mm, sure.
So, Yeah, ongoing issues, sadly.
Yeah, for sure. And ongoing issues in Myanmar. Protests have a loss of life now. Protests are now deadly and the confrontations continue. I know that the UN Secretary General has spoken out, Antonio Guterres has spoken out about the use of deadly violence in Myanmar. What's the latest there?
Well, it has, and rightly so, attracted international attention. What sort of an effect that's going to have, one couldn't say, because the protests today have been largely peaceful. And now they've had this terrible clash and two deaths from this particular protest in an area called Mandalay. Two protesters shot dead, approximately 20 injured. So the security forces, they simply opened fire on crowds in this city of Mandalay, and they've called it the bloodiest clash since the military seized power only 3 weeks ago. And it's in response to this civil disobedience movement, which is increasing in pace. But it has been a civil disobedience movement that has not been a violent one. Now the army are getting more and more concerned, quite rightly so. And one of the triggers was an issue. There is a dockyard on a river, and some of the military were demanding that these workers sail a boat a little bit further up north to deliver fuel to another military base. And essentially the workers said no, protesters were trying to protect them, and the police opened fire there. So these protests are getting, well, more dangerous, a little bit more bloody. The arrests are increasing. There, as I mentioned, I think it was last week, that there are these night squads that are arresting all sorts of people involved with this civil disobedience movement. And that is ongoing. So it remains to be seen what the next step will be. There's also, Sarah Jane, the first funeral. So one of the first protests, there was an injury that has now resulted in a death. And the first funeral is being held today for that protester. So it's predicted that there could be a bit of a show of anti-military groups and might there. So that's happening. And just with regards to Suu Kyi, she's still under house arrest. She'll appear in court on March the 1st, but the latest charge is violating a natural disaster management law.
All right.
So no, and yes.
It's, you know, it almost becomes, with this Myanmar situation, it almost becomes, you almost become numb to it. Do you know what I mean? You almost become, you look at the news, the headlines, and you think, oh yeah, what's going to be the conclusion? Listen, next up, a story that we've spoken about a lot during this particular segment, but Facebook has now blocked access to news on Australian sites. We spoke about this, I can't remember last, maybe about a month ago, and it's happened. I'm quite shocked.
It's happened. They did it. They did it. So
I thought it was a bluff, and I think we spoke about that also, Katie. Yeah, was it
exactly
a bluff? Wasn't a bluff.
They went ahead. Not at all. On Thursday morning, those who have Facebook accounts woke up unable to access any news on their sites, and even overseas, you can't access any Australian news or news from Australian publishers. So they did it. They blocked it. But what they did in blocking this, on Thursday, they inadvertently also banned access to government accounts and Facebook pages of government bodies, health departments, and emergency services. So you can well imagine how that went down, especially in the lead-up now to the launch of the vaccine next week and with everything else going on. They apologised, they reinstated those accounts and pages, but they have done it. And while they have done this, Google has been negotiating deals with news publishers. So I know, for example, that they've got an interim agreement with, I think it's Channel 9, they're going to be paying $30 million for access to various news content. Facebook went ahead and they've blocked it, or they've blocked news.
Well, you said it was going to happen. It did happen. We've got about a minute left, Katie. I just want to quickly touch on this. Schools in New Zealand, I mean, another tick in the box for Jacinda Ardern, it has to be said. Schools in New Zealand are going to be offering free sanitary products to students starting in June.
Yeah, and I just, this resonated with the South African situation as well. So, yes, she's announced that as of June, they're going to be offering free menstrual products to students in schools. And it's in, their aim is to combat what they refer to as period poverty. And they've done their own studies, which I'm sure have been done in South Africa, looking at the numbers of girls that are negatively affected because of this, because they can't afford sanitary products. So that's a big thumbs up, and that's starting in June. Brilliant news
it
out of there.
It seems she can do no wrong, old Jacinda. Listen, Katie, thanks ever so much. We are going to bid you adieu. I will catch up with you in a couple of weeks' time. I'm off for the next couple of weeks, having the old tonsils out. So I will return, or you will return. Yeah, I know. You will return to us, and I will be tonsil free. So there we go. That's something exciting to look forward to. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your time in Borough Do.
Thank you.
And Borough Don't. Okay, goodbye.